welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, L. Ariel, and we can be found at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. How's everyone doing? We are on the streaming platforms, too. You can download, stream us on iTunes, Google Play, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Stitcher Podcasts, and more. We always, always, always love if you are listening to us on one of those streaming platforms to give us some stars, give us some feedbacks. We'd love to get your words, your good words, your bad words, whatever you feel, but just get us some feedback, some stars, so we can get higher up in the rankings and more people can find out about our little podcast, Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? Because we are all about talking to the movers and shakers and innovators from all aspects of the music biz, and we talk about how they got their music job. We start from the very beginning. We don't hold back. We get all the details, all the nooks and crannies, all the trials and tribulations. So really, really good stuff. We have amazing episodes also on the website if you can't find them on the streaming platform. So go on back and listen to them. Last week we had Michael Beinhorn. So he is this incredible record producer. He just most recently worked with Weezer on their brand new album, The Black Album. But he is a legend in the music biz. He was one of the architects behind the epic, the historic track Rocket by Herbie Hancock that won Grammy and was just considered like one of the most incredible innovative tracks of its day. And he did not let the moss grow under him. He continued to work throughout the music biz, working with the likes of Red Hot Chili Peppers and Soundgarden and Marilyn Manson and Hole, and I can go on and on and on, but just really, he was behind a lot of the seminal albums. So if you didn't get a chance to hear that incredible podcast where we go from gritty, dirty 1970s New York City to the future of music and whether or not we will all be killed by robots and music will just be created by AI, it's a pretty good discussion. So go on back and listen to that. So this week I have the amazingly talented Chris Velasco, and he is going to talk about his career as a video game composer, most recently working on the hit video game. Do they call them hits? I don't even know. Fortnite. So he's going to tell us all about his career journey, how he got to where he is today.
But first, here's one of Chris's very cool tracks from Darksiders 3. Here's Lust.
Chris, welcome to Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job?
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me, what is your first memory of music? Tell me all about the household that you grew up in terms of music.
It wasn't a super musical household. Like, I didn't even really get into music as even an idea of a career until I was in my, I'd say, early 20s. But I have a, God, just like thinking back, I can think of really like three, I'm not sure which was the first memory, but I've got three kind of distinct memories of music as a kid. And one was seeing, I think the very first movie I ever saw in the theater, I was like 3 years old and I saw Star Wars. My mom took me to see Star Wars in the theater, and I have a distinct memory of hearing John Williams like, big opening fanfare, and then her reading me the scroll, you know, as it goes up the screen.
Oh, I just got chills. That's awesome. I love that.
And then I also remember as a little kid, that was honestly probably the first one, but I also have a pretty strong memory of listening to Peter and the Wolf as a little kid as well. And thinking that it was kind of scary, like the music would come in for the wolf, and I thought that was scary, and the grandfather's music seemed kind of scary too. And then also Neil Diamond. My mother was a huge Neil Diamond fan, and it was always on at the house, and I absolutely hated it. And then as I got older, I started to actually love Neil Diamond, and he's now kind of my go-to karaoke songs.
Love it. That's so perfect. Now, let's talk music in terms of learning or instruments. Did you take any lessons or anything like that?
Not as a kid. It's funny, I actually really wanted to take piano lessons because I had a friend and who was playing piano, and I never really had any interest in it, but I went to his house, and he was actually playing the theme to Star Wars on piano, and completely blew my mind. And I was like, okay, I want to do that. So I told my parents, I want piano lessons. And they said, no, we don't have a piano. We're not going to get one, and there's no way for you to practice, so forget it. So that was that. And I didn't pick up any kind of instrument until I was like 16 or 17, and I started to play guitar, and I actually had a death metal band, and then somehow that kind of led into classical guitar, and then me learning music for real, and then making a career of it.
What's the name of the death metal band?
We were called Tribal Corruption. We originated in Bakersfield, and we used to, there was this up-and-coming band called Korn, also from Bakersfield, and I remember a couple of shows where you know, this band Korn opened for us, actually, and I was like, you know, what is this? This guy's, like, rapping on top of metal, and this is just weird, and I don't think I like this, and joke's on me. I really feel like we sort of enabled them to their to reach their great success.
Yeah, well, you were the key to their stardom, I'm sure. So it's interesting. I mean, late bloomer in the sense of, you know, music can tend to be sort of a very early child development thing for a lot of people. So it's interesting that you started this kind of in your late teens. And what was the move to classical guitar about? Was it technique or?
My dad actually kind of played classical guitar, not professionally or anything, but just kind of as a hobby. And I don't know, I just thought that maybe it would be fun to give it a try. Again, I didn't think as a profession or anything, just something that I thought might help my my other guitar playing. And I still couldn't read music, and I kind of went through that phase of, oh, I'm not going to learn how to read music. That's just, you know, that's how you become stuck in a rut and only playing other people's things. And these days, you don't even need it because there's tablature for guitar. And I can play, you know, I can find anything in tablature. And I was just very against learning music. And I have to say, probably I was just being lazy. But I eventually
learned. So tell us about that. Did you minor in music, major in music when you went to college? Like, what happened?
I started out going to just the local junior college, kind of not knowing what I wanted to do. And, you know, just figured I would go there and kind of figure out what I might be passionate about, what I wanted to, you know, kind of what I wanted to be when I grew up. And so I just took a ton of classes and just a bit of everything. And I had a music appreciation course, like my second year there. And I didn't really, again, have any interest in music. And at that point, like a couple guys from my band had actually gone off to college elsewhere. So I was trying out some new people, but it was kind of winding down. So music was really kind of on its way out for me. And so I took this class, though, and we one day listened to Mozart's 40th Symphony, and I just had this kind of epiphany in class, and I was just so moved by this piece of music. And I kind of decided then and there that I wanted to be a composer. And which was kind of crazy because I couldn't read music. I had no training at all. I'd never written anything for orchestra. I had probably been to an orchestra concert somewhere at one time, but, you know, nothing that I can really remember. So it was just kind of crazy to think, like, oh, I heard this you know, 5 minutes of music, and it changes my life. But that's exactly what happened. So I stayed at the school for one more year and just took all music courses, learned to read music, started playing piano, took theory and ear training and music history, and then put together a portfolio at the end of the year and sent that off to a few schools that I thought might be fun to go to study music, and wound up going to UCLA. So, yeah, moved down here and started studying music full-time for my major.
Wow. So, I mean, UCLA has an incredible music school. I don't know. It's now the Herb Albert. I don't know if that's what it was called when you were there.
Oh, that's so funny. No, they... that's right. I forgot they changed the name. I couldn't remember what it was. It was Schoenberg Hall while I was there.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, this is not small potatoes. This is a really good music school. So I think that's kind of astonishing that the fact that within a year you were able to develop enough of a portfolio that just really kicked ass.
I don't know if it kicked ass, but it was, I guess it was okay enough that they saw some promise. Like, okay, we can teach this guy something.
You're so modest.
What's funny about UCLA, though, and I think the program has changed dramatically since when I was there, but I thought going there that what I wanted to do was, like, get a PhD and teach music at the college level, and then in my spare time, like, you know, write these symphonic works that were going to be performed by orchestras. And, you know, I really had no idea what does being a composer entail. But I just kind of thought, well, that seems like a path, and it sounds fun enough, I guess. And then I was there, and I decided, no, this is not for me at all. What I really love is film music, and that later turned into what I really think I would love to do is score video games. But I was just about to graduate, and I started kind of panicking, thinking, oh my God, I've learned no skills to actually survive outside of Schoenberg Hall.
Was it like a classical? Was it a classical study or?
Yeah.
So it was just preparing you for, like, traditional sort of, again, orchestral pieces, yeah?
Yeah, it was. And also, they just kind of preparing you, yeah, to write for an orchestra, but also to perhaps continue your education and, you know, become a professor yourself, which is what I originally thought I wanted to do.
Right.
But,
and that's sort of a traditional music, yeah, exactly.
Right, and so I'm graduating, and it's like, oh, God, how do... Like, nobody ever actually told me, hey, here's how you can monetize being a composer. So, you know, I've racked up insane student debt. I'm getting ready to leave, and I've got, you know, no gigs lined up. Like, all my roommates that I had, they were, like, in biochem, and so they were getting offers before they graduated, and they're like, oh, I just got a job for $100,000. And I'm like, oh, that's how wonderful for you. So I went back to the head of music and said, hey, I think I'd like to stay on and get my master's. And the only reason I wanted to do that was to postpone the inevitable of me having to kind of face the real world. And I thought it was going to be a no-brainer, like they'd be sure, stay another couple of years. But he said, no, it has come to our attention that you want to do film music and possibly even music for games. And we consider that to be low art, and we don't want you here.
What?
I know, isn't that bananas?
God.
Like in like
that is so
the
bananas.
Heart of L.A. where, you know, where film scoring was basically born, and they were calling it low art. It was pretty mind-blowing. So needless to say, I did not go back and get any kind of advanced degree. I left, and it took me 7 years to land my first professional project. So for 7 years, I, like, worked every restaurant job, and I roofed houses, and I even... Oh, my God, I did things like cleaning out wells in a forest and I worked at a women's clothing store for one day before I quit. I was told I wasn't working fast enough, and like, oh, well, yeah, so many just, I even did some busking on 3rd Street Promenade with my classical guitar. Even though I graduated, I learned that if I said something about being a student, people would feel sorry for me and put more money in there. So, like, please support a UCLA student.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but were you actually able to work on music during these 7 years? Were you, like, consistently working?
So when I would get home from the job or before I would go, I would always be writing, you know, just trying to just get better and kind of put together some sort of portfolio. And I remember cold calling. God, I would get like a Hollywood Reporter or something and just go through and see things that were in production or pre-production. And I would just start calling numbers. And of course, that amounted to nothing. Except one guy, I called some, God, I don't even remember who it was, so I'm not outing anybody, but I called somebody, some number, and I explained who I was and the composer, and it was, God, I don't even remember exactly what happened, but this person said, oh, let me put you in touch with the director, and like gave me his personal number, and I had this in my hand, like, you know, like the Willy Wonka's golden ticket. I was just like, holy shit, I've got a producer's or a director's phone number. And I just thought, this is my ticket in. I'm gonna score this guy's film. So I called him up, and oh my God, he just tore me a new one. It was,
oh God.
This guy was extremely full of himself and just told me how never in his life has he ever heard of a composer calling a director before, and just like I was petrified. I was just a deer in headlights. Like I couldn't even hang up. He spent, I don't know, a good 10 minutes just screaming at me on the phone. And that was the end of my cold calling. I thought that was so shitty. I'm never doing that again.
Wow. That's so brutal.
Yeah, but then, so you know, 7 years later, I got an opportunity to pitch for a video game based on Battlestar Galactica.
Yes, nice.
Which I had loved as a kid and watched with my mom again, mm-hmm. like in the mornings. And this is the original one, you know, not the reboot.
I had a crush on Dirk Benedict. Believe me, I know exactly the one you're talking about.
Who didn't? But they said, oh, but we need the pitch by, like this evening, like 5 o'clock, which is really unheard of. So that means that I absolutely found out about this kind of the last day they were accepting demos. And the game industry was a little bit looser back then, where it's kind of like, oh, I heard about this thing, and so I'm just going to submit. Like that day, mm-hmm. I mean, this day, that would never, ever happen. But so I heard about it, and it was, so I called up my work, which was, turns out to be the last kind of, you know, normal job I ever had, but it was probably the worst one too. I was a telemarketer, probably the worst telemarketer, because I just didn't care and I didn't want to, probably all stems back from that guy yelling at me on the phone. I just didn't want anybody getting angry with me on the phone. So I'd say, you know, hey, Mr. Smith, do you want this thing? It's like, no. All right then, have a great day. But I called them and they knew I wanted to be a composer. And I said, guys, I've got this great opportunity. I'm going to need the day off, if you don't mind, so I can do this demo. And I said, nope, we need you here. And so I said, okay, well, then I quit. And I just stayed in my little apartment writing my Battlestar Galactica pitch all morning and all afternoon. And I turned it in. And I, maybe 10 minutes later, got a phone call from this game company. And again, I had never pitched for anything before, so I didn't know that was really weird for them to actually call me. Because again, that usually doesn't happen. But they called and they said, hey, Chris, we got your your demo. We really loved it. Unfortunately, we hired somebody about an hour ago.
Oh, shit.
We had no idea that you were even submitting, and, like, I'm so sorry, but we just wanted to tell you that we loved it, and we'll definitely kind of keep your name on file, and next project that comes around, we'll give you a buzz. And so I was just completely crushed, and I actually called my mom, and I told her about the whole thing, and I was like, you know, it's been 7 years. I've been killing myself. I think you have to maybe find that moment where you say, this isn't going to work out. Like, music will always be a part of my life, but it's not going to be part of my professional life. And I was going to go to culinary school to be a chef. And
wow.
My mom said, no, they're going to call you back. You'll see. It's going to be great. You're meant to do this game. And I was like, oh yeah. Okay, mom, that's not how it happens, but sure. And the next day I was looking up culinary schools, and I was really serious about it. And then that afternoon, that company calls me again, and they said, you know, we were listening to your demo again, and we really loved it, and we loved the passion behind it, and I can tell that you're a fan of the old series, and we'd like to give you this one cinematic to score and see how it goes. And yeah, I almost fainted from that.
Aww.
So it was like maybe like 2-3 minutes of music. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, I can pay my rent and my bills from this one gig, from this one like 3-minute track I have to write. I don't have to worry about bills for a month. And I thought, I am a successful composer. Like, that was always my goal. I thought, if I can pay my bills by only composing, I'll be a successful composer. And so I felt so amazing at that moment. And I did the 3-minute track, and they loved it, and then they gave me another one, and then another one, and another one. And they finally wound up firing the composer they originally hired and asked me to just score the whole thing. And that kind of got the wheels turning on my career in games.
Wow. Now, just a quick question for people that are interested in this field. When you say a pitch, what does that kind of consist of? Like, is it you're scoring for a specific scene, or you're scoring several different possible scenes, or?
In a game, it's usually they'll ask you to write a main theme, or they'll say, oh, give us some kind of combat music, because, you know, generally every game there's some kind of combat components to it. So it's just kind of, they sort of give you a rough outline of what the project is going to be about, and then some guys will tell you, oh, we like, here's a good reference list of music that we like. So if you stay within this ballpark, that would be great. Other guys they have no idea. They're just hoping that you'll come up with something that's going to kind of blow them away. So it's just kind of, writing, I'd say, 1 to 2-3 minutes of music without a lot to go on. This is your sort of calling card to try to get the project. Like, hey, here's what I feel the music would be like, and here's what I'm bringing to the table. So see if you like it.
So just another question about sort of the development of scoring for video games. Did you find that because it was a sort of more recent in the grand scheme of film scoring versus gaming, that they would be more open to, say, more kind of experimental or different sounding, or were they more actually, no, we want to sound more cinematic, we want it to sound like traditional big movie type scoring, or was it sort of all over the place?
Just in general in games, you mean?
Yeah, just curious. Or just when you were starting out, or at least, because this was obviously like...
No, starting out, at least the projects that I was going after were all fairly kind of traditional, kind of that cinematic, like trying to trying to be kind of Hollywood on a budget sound. These days, it's, I mean, that's what I love to do, so that's most of what I do these days, but I also have a lot of opportunity, especially in games, to be a little more experimental, because I think that, yeah, there's still, I mean, games are really a big budget enterprise now, but I find that they're still willing to kind of think outside the box a little bit, at least musically sometimes.
Yeah, and I think, so I'm not a gamer. I am romantically involved with a gamer, but I am not a gamer. But I do love, I love watching him play, believe it or not, because it is, to me at least, like watching a movie, especially the more recent games. And I love watching the trailers for games because, again, it does feel very much like a Hollywood movie, very cinematic. So I actually like the fact that they kind of follow that same, I don't know what you'd call it, trajectory or calling card or whatever. I'm just curious, is that kind of your experience as well?
That
the games are kind of going after the Hollywood movie experience in terms of the way...
I mean, some of them, for sure. All the big, like, AAA titles now, I think, mm-hmm. are definitely kind of meant to be sort of that blockbuster movie that you are involved in. You know, watching a movie is obviously just a very passive experience. Gaming, you're involved. You know, you are that character.
Yeah, obviously, as the movie, I'm assuming that scoring for gaming, I think, would be a little bit trickier because it is such an interactive project, right? It's like the user is immersed in the game, and so therefore it's not just going to be like watching sort of a passive linear movie experience, yeah?
Yeah, well, that's the thing about games is they are definitely nonlinear because you as the player are in control of how fast or slow the narrative is moving. Okay. So I definitely feel like writing music for games is much harder than writing for film or TV. Yeah. And I think most game composers agree with me. But again, that's just my experience. And I have, you know, luckily been able to dabble in both film and television. And the deadlines are much tighter for those. So that kind of adds a whole different dynamic to the stress. But games, we've got way more time usually. But I think the music is so much more involved, just having to keep in mind ways of that it'll be used interactively.
Mm-hmm. And the other question is, I feel like when you were getting into gaming, it was sort of, and again, you know more than me, obviously, but that it was sort of the perfect time to be getting into scoring games as video gaming has just continued to blow up. Did you find that once you kind of got in with this one particular gaming company that things just naturally progressed from there? It was like one job just kept leading to the next and the next and the next?
It did. And I don't know if that's typical or, you know, I hate to say that anybody's lucky about this stuff because so much time and effort goes into it. So it's not luck, it's determination and persistence. But yes, there's a degree of luck to it as well. And yeah, I absolutely got in at a great time. Well, games, you know, they've been around for a while now, but kind of what became like our sort of contemporary games now, I feel we're just kind of starting to emerge back when I started, like in the early 2000s. And yeah, I've been very fortunate that it seems like one project has led into another. And I think maybe the fourth project I worked on was a game by Sony called God of War, and mm-hmm. which became a huge IP for them. And at the time, I had a friend that worked at Sony, and he just, you know, he said, "Hey, I've got this new project. Would love for you to pitch on it. I think that you'd be a good fit." And yeah, I got it, and that's what became this colossal IP, God of War. But back then, it was just as easy as like, "Oh, I'm friends with this guy." and he gave me the opportunity to demo for it. These days, that would just, unfortunately for kind of newer composers just coming out of school, those kind of opportunities really just don't exist anymore. Now it's much more like the film industry, where you would never get the opportunity to like pitch for Spielberg's next movie. You know, that's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and who knows? I mean, maybe the next platform or something like that is the way to kind of what you did, but with a different, whether it's, I don't know, AI or deep fakes or whatever is like going to come down the pike kind of thing. But
there's a huge indie community now, and that did not exist really when I was trying to make my breakthrough into games. And you were kind of asking before, are movies, are games trying to be more like big cinematic blockbuster experiences? And I was saying, yes, the AAA stuff definitely is, but there's a whole indie scene that even going back to kind of the original like crappy like 8-bit graphics and even soundtracks now that are using the same type of like musical emulators now to like reproduce those old chip tunes, and right. It seems like it's a response to the multi-hundred-million-dollar games. It's like, some kid is like, well, I'm going to make this awesome game in my bedroom, on the weekends. And there's a market for that now. And, you can put it on the App Store, on iTunes. Okay. And I know a lot of success stories of guys that just, like, bought a coding book off of Amazon and learned how to make a game and just did it over the course of a year or two and released it. And it was somehow, it just caught fire. And these guys, became extremely successful. So there's, I think that while a lot of kids coming out of school, they're not going to have the opportunity, at least right away, to score anything huge, any big AAA projects. There are tons and tons and tons of these indie games that all need music, and I think it's a great place to start out.
Yeah, and I love that. I just love that that's like this whole new sort of like underground subgenre that's coming out, that again with sort of the democracy of coding and technology, that yeah, now it's like you in your bedroom. And I crack up because the other thing is like the run on like Casio keyboards on eBay now, like just for the demo music, because now it's like the cheesiest possible stupidest music is now like, oh my god, that's so sick, I want to put that in my movie or my thing. It's a trip to just kind of see that happening. But I think the cool thing is too, and again this is thanks to my boyfriend, but that you guys being video game composers, that now you guys really have a presence on streaming platforms like Spotify, where now people love your music and they can follow you and stream and get to know all your repertoire and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many like tools out there now for self-promotion and for building a fan base. And, the gamers are, a lot of them are so passionate about the music too. And I've seen over the last like 10 years, so many like big symphonic concerts, all over the world that are now playing arrangements of video game music, like all the way from old stuff like Frogger to anything, that just came out. And I've had the opportunity to play or have my music performed really all over the world. And
oh, so cool.
The coolest thing, who would have ever thought like that me getting a, turned down to go back to school and saying it's low art, and now here it is, like, oh, I'm going to Australia to hear, the Sydney symphony, like perform my score to, you know, this game I just did. It's crazy.
That is so cool. That is so amazing. What you need to do is like pull a Pretty Woman, like Julia Roberts, and go back to the retail store where you worked for one day and be like, remember when you fired me? Big mistake. Big.
They'll just be, I'm sorry, who are you?
Yeah, exactly. They'll be like, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I wanted to just ask one more question, and this is kind of what's been the buzz right now, and that is Fortnite, and that, you know, Marshmello had a virtual concert in Fortnite, and what's kind of your take on that, and in terms of music and gaming, and how do you see the future of that sort of continuing to evolve?
So, I'm now going to be so embarrassed and say that I don't have any idea what that even means.
I love it. I love it. That's great. That makes me feel better because I just read about it last week.
Okay, and it's so funny because I read something on Twitter today that Epic was saying, oh, something about a Marshmello thing, and I was like, oh, okay, whatever. no idea what that is.
I love it. I love it.
But that's awesome. I recently actually wrote the music to season 7 of Fortnite. And
so awesome.
They, you know, I knew of this juggernaut game called Fortnite. All my friends that have kids that are of that age are like you know, hovering around 10 sort of. They are just like get home and like just download Fortnite into their veins. It is nonstop. But I had never played it. But I got a call from my agent, and he's like, okay, just got a call from Epic. They want you to score season 7. Like, are you down for this? And I was like, oh, my God, yes, I am. And so I downloaded the game, and I thought, I'm going to spend the weekend playing this, and I'll know everything about it. I played a total of 2 times, and I was like, okay, I don't get it. this game is not for me, but it's for millions of other people. So I'm going to go to my friend's house and watch his son play Fortnite. And he seemed like really excited that I wanted to watch, but a little suspicious, like, why are you suddenly interested in Fortnite? Like, no, you know, I just play. I'm just going to watch you. And so I watched what was going on and kind of got the vibe of the game. And, you know, I was dying to tell him that I was scoring it because he was just going to completely lose his shit. But, you know, of course I couldn't, NDAs and everything. But I was going to be recording the score very soon. And I thought, oh, I'm gonna put him on the soundtrack. So my friend, who's also a composer, we went into his studio. And I had his son just hit some cymbals, and we recorded it. And then every time in my score where I had a cymbal crash, I replaced it with the one his son played. And then the game came out, and I could talk about it. And I went and told him about that. You know, he's on the score for Fortnite, and it was so awesome to see how happy it made him.
I'm sure. You're going to have, like, this horde of 10-year-olds
show up at your house.
I finally found my niche here.
Your niche. There it is. It's 10-year-olds. Oh, that's amazing. I love it. Well, again, I'm so grateful. I know you're a very, very busy guy, so I'm so grateful that you could take the time to speak with us. And I just want to ask real quick, are you in the social media thing at all? Like, can people follow you on social media, or do you want to give your website, or
what's that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm on Twitter. I think it's Monarch Audio is my handle there, and I think the same thing on Instagram, and it's just Chris Velasco on Facebook. But if you go to chrisvelasco.com, I actually just got a new website that I'm pretty happy about. So it's C-R-I-S, no H in Chris.
Okay, perfect. All right, well, thank you so much, Chris. I'm adding an H at the end. Thank you so much, Chris. Really appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks. It's my pleasure. Thanks a lot for the call.
My special thanks to Chris for being on Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? And just some great insights, especially for those of you who want to break into the industry or are looking for the next big thing. So you can find Chris again on his website, CRISVELASCO.com, or on Twitter at Monarch Audio, or on the IG. Well, thus ends another week of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your hostess with the mostest, L. Ariel. You can find me and my music at LARIELmusic.com. That's LARIELmusic.com. We are also on the social media at Music Jobs Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. You can also follow me, L Ariel, at LARIEL Music. I hope everyone is doing great. We're almost at spring, almost so close. So just hang in there, my loves. And remember, we are going to keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't you give up.